moment. We'll welcome the new year, all of us, and step into a full year of things that have yet to be. A calendar's worth of adventures and joys, of breathtaking moments, of important work to do, perhaps amazing adventures and wild plot twists, and a year of the tiny details that make up our lives week after week, month after month. New Year's Eve has gotten a bad rap to some. It's kind of gotten dismissed as a night of overpriced drinks and crowded rooms and tipsy revelry. But the beauty of this night is the promise of a fresh start for us all. Sure, we can all have a fresh start any morning, even any moment, but there's something enchantingly tabula rasa about this celebratory night, that the outgoing year becomes a mere dress rehearsal for the one ahead, and even a tough year is simply wiped clean, the clock reset, and we all get to very officially try again. And because we just never know what lies ahead in the year to come, let us take these final hours of this year, of 2016, and its sometimes exhausting quirks along with its highest highs, and reflect on the moments and people who mattered to us most and to whom we gave space in our minds. In the new year, as we step into 2017 with gusto and hope, let us take the words of Ralph Waldo Emerson to heart and write it on our hearts that every day is the best day in the year, and see if we can strive to be just a little bit more every single day in the year ahead. More generous with our time and laughter and smiles, more encouraging to the magical imaginations of the youngest, more willing to honor the wisdom of the oldest, more appreciative of those we are lucky enough to love. May we be more friendly and welcoming to those who are lonely, more thoughtful with our words to others, and certainly more loving and patient in our words to ourselves, more demonstrative about the way we love and care for one another. More open to being our best selves and to speaking our truth, more willing to hear a variety of opinions and engage in tough conversations, more honest with those who matter to us, more healing to those who hurt, more giving of compassion and tenderness to those without, more present and more eager than ever to live each day of 2017 with meaning and leave the year ahead a little better than we found it. I look forward to another year of conversation with you. Fates, radio gods, and bosses willing anyway. And I say conversation, and I mean it. For long gone are the days any of us sitting on this side of the microphone can simply talk. But rather, now is a time to listen, to talk with, and not talk to. Tonight, we'll look back over a year of Saturday night conversations. We'll visit with some of our favorite regular guests and remember moments in 2016, both on this show and across a variety of topics. Ones that made us laugh until we could hardly breathe, along with moments that took all we had to face, and many that did a bit of both or fell somewhere in the middle. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up tonight on the Saturday night New Year's Eve special on 720 WGN.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout mid-America.
Radio? Well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN. Tonight, we are taking a look at 2016 as we send it off and ring in the year ahead. Regular guest, co-host, and darn good friend to us all, Dr. John Duffy, will be in studio with us tonight. He is here hanging out with us, and we will hear from some of our favorite other guests, too. Our very own Ryan Burrow will join us to talk about the top news stories that shaped 2016, followed by another one of our own, Sam Panionovich, will be around to talk about the big sports stories that had us all losing our minds and flying the W this past year. Producer Griffin Filipich will join to talk about movies that made us laugh and made us think in 2016. And Chicago Tribune's Rex Hupke promises to prank call us at some point. And so we'll check in with him for some 2017 predictions, as well as WGN's own David Miranda, who is co-hosting Chi-Town Rising tonight just across the river from here. He's going to check in with us just in a little bit and give us a preview of the festivities to come tonight. And of course, producer Rachel Woodall and I have enjoyed the heck out of thinking back over the past year and pulling some of our favorite moments from the archives, which we will play and share and talk about too. all night. I would be so delighted to hear from you about your resolutions from the year ahead, or just say hello and tell us what you're doing tonight, however you're celebrating. Feel free to give us a call, 312-981-7200. If you're feeling a little bit shy, and that's perfectly okay, you can text that number, or you can find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and contribute to the conversation that way too. All right, we will be right back in just a bit to get the conversation underway on 720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us tonight on the Saturday Night Special. We're talking all about 2016. We are putting this turkey of a year to bed is what we're doing. And we're hanging out with our good friend and regular contributor to this program. Running co-host with us tonight is Dr. John Duffy. Welcome.
Thanks. So glad for having me.
Oh my gosh.
Glad to be here.
I'm so glad that you are here. You know, we have, you've been on the show many, many times. You're, as I like to say, you're the one that we like to call when we go, what makes people act that way? And Rachel and I were looking through and kind of digging through some past shows, and there's just, man, we dug up some big stuff this year because it was that kind of year.
It was definitely that kind of year.
Yeah. I mean, some highs and lows. Like, we had, you know, a show where we were talking about adventure travel, and the reason we had that show is because we were all, there were so many like awful news stories happening all at once that we were like, we need a minute.
Oh, it was palate cleanser.
It really was. It was the sorbet of radio. That's what it was. And then we had, you know, we had some, I mean, really meaty shows where we were talking about some heavy things. And so Rachel and I were looking through that, and we have a little audio that we've pulled together, kind of some of the best of Dr. Duffy.
All right.
We are joined by frequent contributor of this program and our good friend, Dr. John Duffy. We like to call you in when we ask the question, what makes people act that way?
It is about talking different languages and not recognizing that in real time. And so we end up arguing about things that aren't even really related. It becomes way too often in almost any campaign issue we can find an apples versus oranges debate that people are having out there.
But really, when we think about what it means to be a fan, what does that really mean? It's much more than just appreciating someone's music.
I think it's way more. The music embodies something in you. You know, you relate directly to it. There's something about music and those formative years when we start to really connect with music and it speaks to us. And it's kind of like, oh, Prince, he hears me. And When Doves Cry, words speak to me. And then you become a fan. When you really focus on what's working, the stuff that doesn't work very well falls away really, really easily. That is kind of the focus of my practice, is to kind of help root out those strengths and minimize the things that aren't working very well. And what we call weaknesses oftentimes aren't. There's oftentimes like a lot of just vulnerability woven into what we call weaknesses, and sometimes they're our biggest strengths in the end. And I think when somebody's that big and that iconic, the loss is real. I think the loss amongst the masses is a real felt thing and a very personal thing in an odd way, despite how public the death would appear to be and the news of the death would appear to be. I think everyone's experience of the grief is singular, or most people's anyway, fans. And you can't expect perfection, especially the first time through. There are going to be bumps in every road, and that's part of the reason we do this adventurous stuff, is we want... The bumps make it interesting.
We covered a lot this year, you and I. We have talked about a lot of things. I was sitting here making a list as we were listening to that clip. We were talking about fanship a lot because we lost so many people, so many iconic stars. In particular, I think in that conversation, we were talking about Prince and David Bowie.
We were, and you think about everybody we've lost since then. I was just thinking as we're saying that, I know we were referencing Prince and David Bowie, but my goodness, we could have that conversation tonight.
I know, yeah. I know. And I was just saying this yesterday. I said, all year I've been saying, I'm still not over Bowie, and all this stuff keeps happening. And then I looked up, what date did he die? That was January the 10th.
Unbelievable, right?
All year.
You and I did the same thing yesterday. I looked up the same thing, and I couldn't believe it was January. Yeah. I felt like it just happened.
I know. It still felt very fresh, because I think it kept coming, right? We also, in that clip, there were several references to political discussions we were having. In particular, we were talking about how to talk to each other about politics in this really contentious, strange political year that we were in. And then there was a little bit in there about adventures, which was kind of our kind of the conversation we had that was like the healing balm to all of that.
Yes, all that grief and all that stuff. Thank goodness we had it.
You know, it has been very fashionable to for people to say awful things about 2016.
Like, absolutely.
Oh, this year. There was a piece, I want to say it was in The Atlantic, about, and the headline said something like, let's stop saying 2016 killed all these celebrities. Let's admit that addiction did.
Right.
Which is such an interesting, you know, and more reality-based thing, because we all kind of got swept up in this thing of saying, oh my gosh, this year really sucks. It's so bad. But it wasn't all bad, right? Plenty of joys happened in our day-to-day. It was tough. I know a lot of people that had like some interpersonal stuff. I felt like it was a little uphill personally. But there was a lot of stuff, not to mention all the things in the world that were, you know, big and looming and all that. But I think it's fascinating how we've just been saying, we've been telling ourselves what a terrible year it is. And it's almost, not that we've invited any of it, but it's like we've put ourselves in this mindset.
Yeah, almost a prophetic mindset. So
yeah.
All the information we take in, we're looking at through this lens where it's like, well, this is going in the 2016 is awful right. file, right?
Someone on Etsy made a little a tree ornament and was selling them. I know someone who bought it and put it on Instagram, and I was looking at it. It's a tiny dumpster with flames shooting out of it. It says 2016, the dumpster fire.
Of course, right?
I mean, my Lord. But nonetheless, and so there was a piece in Washington Post, though, that was kind of taking a look at this, about this idea that we're almost like neurologically or you know, where our brains are wired to look for that.
Right.
Is that like, is that sort of an evolutionary thing that we're supposed to be looking for danger and looking for the saber-toothed tigers?
I think that's exactly right. You know, we have this negativity bias, which seems like just this awful thing, but it's probably evolutionary and, you know, it's something where we needed it at some point in our evolution. But these days, we have so much data, so much information mm-hmm. coming at us from so many different sources in so many different ways. And so that bias becomes just overloaded. And then we decide, okay, this whole year then is this awful thing, instead of taking like it event by event and almost looking at it like, okay, this was a terrible loss, but this was a loss to addiction, not to 2016.
Right.
And, you know, and,
right.
and this was a rough day. But I can't blame the year for that. That's just a rough day, and tomorrow
yeah.
could be perfectly fine. And you know, I would imagine if a lot of us looked at the year as a whole and took that negativity bias away, it was probably a lot like the year before, maybe even better.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And I worry that we're all sort of counting on this magic wand to wave at midnight tonight and it's all going to be great, when in fact, some might say we've got a lot of uphill stuff ahead in 2017.
I was talking to a friend earlier who said, you know, 2016 was just a setup for an awful 2017, you know, which talk about a negativity
sure,
bias.
Sure, right. Oh,
right? So we've got to find probably a different way to look at it. In my work, I find I love the arbitrary nature of the changing calendar, because mm-hmm. it is like, as you were saying in your beautiful introduction, this fresh start, right? And it is arbitrary.
Sure.
You know, a calendar flips over. But, you know, you have this opportunity to say, okay, I'm starting clean and I don't mind the idea of resolutions and, you know, plans, as long as they are something you're willing to stick with and are reasonable. But I love the idea of something new.
Right.
You know,
right.
on January 1st.
I know. And, yeah. and it's sort of, I think we all kind of have that in our heads about, you know, like a birthday or something like that. We all kind of, well, now I'm this age. Now I'm this. You know, we have these fresh starts in our lives. Even a Monday, right, can
yeah.
be a fresh start. But there's something about this one, because we see it around the world. We see all the time zones. Like, everybody's kind of doing the same stuff. We all have our different cultural differences. But nonetheless, there's fireworks around the world and everyone's outside doing stuff.
Right.
And so it seems like this, okay, the whole world just got the reset button.
Yes.
We didn't.
Of course not.
But it sort of feels that way, right? It sort of has this feel to it that maybe we get a fresh start or something. But I think that can, in a way, can be very helpful, you know, to have this like, okay, because it makes us make decisions. It makes us go, okay, this year I'm going to fill in the blank, release this bad habit, add this thing, do this new thing. I like to theme years myself.
How do you theme your years?
Well,
I like this idea.
This started because a friend of mine several years ago, one New Year's Eve, he was like, I was alone. I was like in my mom's basement and I didn't have a girlfriend. It was just all bad. And, you know, and so he said, okay, this year I'm going to do all the things I dare. And I'm just going to go all out and go nuts. And if I have an idea, I'm just going to do it right then. And it ended up being kind of a magical year for him. It was kind of like the Shonda Rhimes year of yes sort
Absolutely.
Of thing, right?
Right.
He had his own.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really interesting. And he just kind of called it the year of me. And I've been thinking, you know, I think we all kind of check in with ourselves a little for birthdays, for New Year's. Mm-hmm. Thing. I always write myself a letter on like the last week of the year. I'm just kind of like, here's what you're up to right now. Here's what you're wishing. And then I read it. Like I just read last year's and I was like, oh man, some of it is, you know, really interesting and,
uh-huh.
and comforting. Cause you're like, oh, I did that thing. Good.
Right, right.
Good job. And some of it's like, why was I thinking that? What was I wanted to do what? Why in the world? You know, it's just funny how we evolve and things change us and move us throughout the year.
And yet, what a great way to take stock too.
Yeah. You know, the other thing I do, I have this giant jar on my kitchen counter. I've talked about this before on the air. If you are an Instagram user, go look up the hashtag the hell yes jar. And it's a giant jar. And every day I put at least one piece of paper in it. And it's something that either wowed me or that I'm grateful for or something. And at the end of the year, I dump them all out and I start reading them. And then I start texting pieces of paper to people because sometimes it'll be like, I was grateful to be on the air with this person or spend the day with this friend or whatever. And I without comment, usually I'll just sort of like, here's this thing.
What a beautiful idea. And I think sometimes we minimize what a gesture like that can mean, not just to us, but the people around us, you know, how really this can have legs, you know, beyond what it seems like it is, right? This kind of exuding positivity and giving a gift to ourselves and
sure.
a gift to somebody else in the same gesture. Really cool.
Truly. It's fun. And it's fun to kind of look back. I think anything that forces us to reflect
yeah.
is really good. And
Agreed.
You probably see that so much in your practice, right? Of trying to get people to do more of it or maybe less of it sometimes if they're like dwelling.
To reflect and the idea of the year of me, the idea
yeah.
of selfishness has become this dirty word. But I think unless we're selfish in a real direct way, we really mm-hmm. work to take care of ourselves and attend to ourselves, literally, you know, then we can't really do much for anybody else because we're not really present. We're not really
yeah.
available to our moments. So I like the idea of your jar because it forces the
it
issue
forces you to do it
in that moment. Yeah.
Right. It
yeah.
forces you to. And even if you accidentally skip a day, you have to look back through your calendar. Okay, what was I doing yesterday? Oh, that. I'm grateful for that. That was fun. Okay, you have to reflect every day. It
it's
makes
a great
you do
idea.
It.
Yeah.
But I think too, there's sort of like bigger themes too. You know, I think for as much as we've called 2016 kind of this year of the struggle bus and the dumpster fire and all these awful things, I think this year the good part of 2016 is that it's made us talk about some things that are hard to talk about. It's made us take on some big issues and it's made us really go to each other and say, what do we need to do to fix it?
Yep.
If I had to name it, we should do it now, right? We'll get the copyright or the
Let's
trademark.
Do it.
I feel like it's going to be this year of almost like this reveal or not a reveal like a ta-da, but a reveal like a vulnerability. Like we're going to have to be very humble and have some very sobering conversations with each other to move forward this year.
And you know, I think you need sometimes a sobering moment in order for that call to arms to happen because without a shock to the system on occasion, you don't have any urgency to connect in a different way. And I do think that this year, for a number of reasons, has driven us toward, you know, connection and understanding. And like you were mm-hmm. saying, listening more than we're talking and trying mm-hmm. to change people's minds, but trying to try and understand, like, where are you coming from here?
Right.
Yeah.
At this point, I think, I feel like changing a mind is a lost cause.
Yes.
We shouldn't even begin to do that. That's
right.
We're so beyond that. We shouldn't even try because that just makes this ugly tug of war.
Exactly.
I think all we need to do right now is get into a place of entering a conversation without being defensive, which is hard, which is very hard to do.
Super hard. It's super hard.
We're human beings.
Right.
We're made to protect our own stuff.
And we believe our own stuff. We
right.
believe we're right.
Right.
An awful
right.
lot of the time.
That's true. We do that too. So to get to a place where you're like, okay, I'm going to enter this conversation and just hear,
yeah.
even if it's threatening to me, I'm just going to hear and try to understand what I'm hearing. And then just make space to have the conversation instead of like, okay, I heard you. Now listen to me. Nope. Nope. We're going to just like find some common stuff. Ooh, that's hard.
If that were our collective goal for the next year, I've got to think that a year from now we sit here talking about a much better year in a lot
oh,
of
man.
Ways.
Oh, man.
Right?
It would be the best.
Yeah,
it would be the best if we got to that point.
But to your point, it's hard.
Indeed. Yes. Nothing, but nothing worth doing is usually,
right?
Is easy. So our good friend Dr. John Duffy is here hanging out with us. We are looking back at 2016 tonight on the Saturday night New Year's Eve special. I'm Amy Guth. We're going to take a little break and check in with news and all that good stuff. And we'll be back in just a minute here on 720 WGN. And so it's complicated, right? I think it's complicated for a lot of people. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And we're going to do so with empathy and respect.
And it's not just, I'm protected by my constitutional rights, therefore you can't tell me what to have and what not to have. I find that problematic because then we're living in a society that's no longer free.
And fear is a political tool to achieve political ends.
It is important that if you have a job to do, that you do it fully as you are hired to do so. I think we can all agree on that for sure. And
Once you guys knew when I called,
I got to go to break.
You wouldn't let me get my point across.
Well, unfortunately, I have to go to break or I'm going to get fired. It's not me. It's the rules.
Well, I don't want you to get fired.
I don't want to get fired either.
Then you'll have a real wage gap.
I'm going to put you on hold. We're going to go to break. I'll be right back here in just a second. We're talking all about the wage gap. And clearly, it is a topic that people are very passionate about. So again, we welcome thoughtful and respectful conversation and many points of view. So there's a lot to this, and I would just encourage us all to think less about who's right and wrong, and less about I didn't like that conversation because I felt like I was persecuted or whatever. No one's being persecuted. It's really about fairness. What different shape will Pride celebrations have? I mean, are they going to be more a memorial, or how will they be existing in Orlando this year?
You cannot defeat somebody with hate. You have to fight back with love. And, you know, if they couldn't change because they hated so much, why should we change our love?
It's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Our good friend Dr. John Duffy is hanging out with us tonight in studio, and we're looking back over 2016, and we've pulled a couple things out of the archives. Just in that little clip that you just heard, we talked about so many big things. That was the wage gap issue show. That was one of the most volatile shows we had this year because so many people had so many strong opinions about that, as you heard from that one caller. We talked about the shooting at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. We talked about the global refugee crisis. We talked about Islamophobia. We talked about gun control. We talked about so many topics that and so many people and smart people contributed to those conversations. I'm so grateful for that. But a lot of big things happened this year, as every year, but especially this year. So many things, and it's like we didn't have a minute. They just kind of kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. So we're joined now by Ryan Burrow, who you know from, he does news right here at WGN. Hey, Ryan, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you guys doing?
Good, good. We're people watching on Michigan Avenue. There's a ton of people outside. But we've been talking about some of the big stories from 2016, and I know you had a front row seat to many of them. So what are the ones that stand out for you?
Yeah, I mean, we could start down the list here. You want to go local or you want to go national? I mean, we can go either way. I'm good. Whatever you guys want.
Well, you know, I think we should start with local, but as I was preparing for the show, I started looking at, because a lot of news organizations had put together lists like this. The Trump presidential win was like at the top of everything, like for local, national, international, all of them. That was such a big one. That one topped Brexit even. So like that was on a lot of lists. But for you, what was the local stories or what were the local stories that really stuck out in your mind?
I'm going to roll through the top five that I saw. Most of these I covered firsthand. First of all, and many of you guys may not remember this, but do you remember that Dennis Hastert was sentenced to prison in April of this year? It was an incredible story. A guy who was just heartbeats away from the presidency, a guy who has been known, well known in Illinois as well as nationally, as the House Speaker, as a congressman, as a teacher, as a wrestling coach, and everything came crumbling down with these allegations, which, by the way, started as bank fraud. Remember, the charges that he faced were bank fraud charges, and everything kind of unraveled after that. The allegations that he was paying someone hush money to keep quiet about sexual abuse allegations dating back to before he was even a public figure. So that was an incredible moment earlier this year, because you had a guy who, let's face it, he's 74 years old. He looked absolutely frail. He's had health problems. You know, he's obviously older. And all of these stories are coming out of things that happened when he was a younger man before he even took office. And we saw a guy who was slumped over. Admitted that all of these allegations were true. We saw people come up and testify, and they were emotional, remembering when they were in high school and these things happened to them, and some of the things that Dennis Hastert did inappropriately touching them. And he ended up getting 15 months behind bars for it. And I think that that was a moment that everyone in Illinois said, oh, my goodness. You know, it was just an incredible scene. And I think a lot of people, you know, they've realized for a long time, obviously, our politicians are not squeaky clean, and that was just another moment of that.
Yeah, definitely. Gosh, that's so bizarre to think that was 8 months ago. That seems like years. Years
and
ago,
he still
already
has 7 months to go in that prison. Well, more than that, about 10 months to go in that prison sentence. And you know, his health has been failing, and we'll see kind of how he's able to navigate through this and move on. Obviously, he's been trying to stay out of the limelight as best as possible. And you know, the other questions is whether he's going to have to continue to make those payments for hush money. So,
right.
We'll continue to follow that. Number four, I would say an event that I was at, and I'm sure that you guys are very well aware of. You brought up Trump earlier. Remember when he came to the UIC Pavilion back in March, and the people out there, they were a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters, some Hillary Clinton supporters. They vowed they were going to shut it down. And I think Donald Trump's campaign made a big mistake by offering up free tickets to that event, because when we were in the UIC Pavilion, you know, even an hour before this thing was getting underway, we knew at least a third of those people in there were not Trump supporters. Hmm. They were getting booted out every 5 minutes. They were standing up. They were chanting. They'd come in. They'd yank them out. And then 5 minutes later, someone else would stand up and start chanting. And it was getting really prickly there for about 20 minutes before Donald Trump was supposed to get on. And then the announcement, when Donald Trump was supposed to go on, that this event had been postponed. And then the place was up for grabs, Amy. It was the most amazing thing I had ever seen, because you had the Donald Trump supporters who were just in shock. It was like their team had lost a buzzer beater. I mean, they had their hands on their heads. Their mouths were open. They couldn't believe that what they had been anticipating wasn't going to happen. And in the meantime, you've got all of these protesters, all of these demonstrators congregating in one corner of the UIC Pavilion, chanting, tearing up Trump signs. And it did get a little testy there for a while, as some Trump supporters who did not want to leave came up and confronted those protesters. And, you know, eventually the cops came in and said, you guys got to get out of here. And then we didn't know what would happen on the streets. You know, following that, because there were more protesters out on the streets. So it made for a very chaotic scene for at least an hour there. But it was a very interesting moment and pivotal moment, I think, for the Trump campaign. They realized, you know, we have to be a little more strategic about where we have some of these rallies.
Yeah, truly. I remember all the photos coming out of that event that were really, that was, I think, the first time we really started to, you're right, it was very pivotal, both for the campaign, I think, and in perception. I think a lot of people really kind of started to look at that campaign a little bit differently. All right, what's next on your list?
I would say that the state budget, obviously, and that this is going to be determined, obviously, in 2017. I mean, a stopgap budget was created, and it gave everyone kind of a little bit of a breather. But looking forward to 2017, as far as I can tell, no deal reached between Governor Rauner and the House Speaker yet. And, you know, these negotiations, I really don't know how they're going to move forward. I mean, I almost think they, and I don't know who you bring in to mediate these discussions. I mean, who in Illinois or who with any kind of skin in the game would be able to bring these two sides together and get a state budget and get this state back on track? I just don't know who it would be.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think that's the problem, is none of us know who that person is. Well, one day.
And, of course, you've got college. You've got college budgets on the line. You've got a lot of social services, you know, who are chomping at the bit, wondering if they're going to get their paychecks for funding for their employees. And it's going to be a challenge even in 2017, I think.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, what's next on your mind?
All right, number two, and I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for this. And I want everyone to understand that I am a huge Cubs fan. Absolutely a massive Cubs fan. And this was the greatest story, I think, in Chicago. But I'm going to put the Cubs at number two. And I'll tell you why at number one. But, wow, what an incredible run that was. Yeah. And the one thing that I got out of this Cubs World Series run is when I was walking around the streets interviewing people, when I was down in Wrigleyville during the World Series, and keep in mind some of those games weren't even in Chicago, it was essentially, Amy, a homecoming for everyone who's been a Cubs fan in their life. We've got people who grew up in Chicago and maybe moved to Indianapolis, maybe moved to Florida, maybe moved to California. And I'm talking to these people, and they just wanted to be there. They wanted to feel the vibe. They wanted to be in Wrigleyville. Even if there wasn't a game, they had to be there. It was like Cubs fans' mecca for a full month. I mean, it really, really was a very, very cool experience. Obviously, the outcome for Cubs fans was fantastic, even though they put us through the ringer, didn't they? Game 7,
they did.
Giving up that huge lead in the 8th inning. And you know, I was at Murphy's Bleachers when that game was going on and getting a pulse of Cubs fandom. And all of a sudden, when that home run was hit against Aroldis Chapman in the 8th inning, everyone, like, the air went out of the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was like, oh my gosh, here we go. The lovable losers, they just can't get over the hump.
And then
after the game winning hits and shutting it down in the 10th inning, after the rain delay of all things, oh my gosh, talk about the stress involved in a rain delay, but it may have been the best thing for them,
yeah.
You know? And I've heard a lot of people say, you know who it was who brought that rain delay? It was Ernie Banks and Ron Santo. And
oh.
I thought that's cool. I mean, think about that. They're down smiling. They're saying, you know what? Everyone take a break, relax. We got this. The rain came. They pulled the tarp off. And Jason Hayward, who had not been hitting well all season long, pulled the team together and probably gave a speech that was worth his contract.
Yeah.
And after that, they went on to win it. And then Wrigleyville was up for grabs. I was walking out on the streets till 3 in the morning with Cubs fans celebrating, waving the flag. And at one point, police just walked up to the group that had gathered and said, guys, go home. We can celebrate tomorrow. And you know what? They all did. I mean, it was peaceful, right? That's what was great about it. There weren't people tipping cars. There weren't people setting mattresses on fire. It was very, very peaceful.
Yeah, I was out there, too. I was not far from you that night and out in the crowd. And it was such an interesting mix of people bringing young children out to see this moment, some people holding on, like clutching pictures of deceased grandparents and parents who weren't there to see it, people weeping, people cheering. And then when it happened, I immediately started to run upstream because I needed to get video out. And the Wi-Fi signal was just so jammed at that point. And I'm running and it was like running upstream as salmon. Like all these people are just running at me. And at one point, I stopped to do a video, and immediately, the second I pull my phone out, a man just crashes right into me. I almost like knock myself out with my phone. So these cops are kind of standing in front of me, just kind of running, you know, like holding that, you know, like all this stuff was happening. I had a friend with me who was just kind of also sort of running interference. It was a fun night. And all night, I think we all just sort of heard, you know, things like fireworks being set off. I saw somebody like setting a little like a fireworks in like a paint can in the middle of the street.
It was
pandemonium, but it was you could feel the joy.
And the word that of the year, actually, and it had relations to a lot of different things, terrorism, the election, but also the Cubs, was surreal. I mean, that's what that moment was. You're looking around, and I really did capture that moment, I feel like, when I was standing there. Because, you know, sometimes in the news business, you're so busy worrying about, you know, okay, where's my next story? Well, who am I going to interview? But that moment when you step back and you look at these people just celebrating, and you're saying, oh, my gosh. This has wiped away all of this heartache for years and generations. I mean, people were writing the names of their grandparents, deceased grandparents on the wall outside of Wrigley. They were crying in memory of watching games with their dad. I mean, just an incredible moment. And I want to make that my number one. I really, really do. But let's face it. And we saw a good example of it today with the demonstration that went down Michigan Avenue. At, you know, 760 people dead in the streets of Chicago. That's our number one story. I mean, it really,
yeah.
it, it, it just, I mean, and you know what? The interesting thing about the murder rate in Chicago is there are cities that have higher murder rates. Milwaukee has an awful year this year. St. Louis, again, another awful year. Memphis, Tennessee, another awful year. But Chicago was the poster child for this rise in murders. And this is something the city is still trying to figure out, still trying to, you know, find some kind of answer to. And we heard Eddie Johnson, you know, he's saying that, you know, once we pick up these guys or women for, you know, multiple gun crimes, we can't keep them behind bars. That's one problem. Number two, Mayor Rahm Emanuel says he's adding more cops to the streets. He hopes that'll help in 2017. That's another issue. But one thing that's kind of flying under the radar, Amy, and not a lot of people are talking about, is the fact that at least midway through the year, the clearance rate of murders as far as cop arrests were only 46% in the city of Chicago. And this kind of speaks to that code of silence, right? People see things, they know things, but they're not talking, and they're not helping out cops. And as a result, the bad guys are able to shoot multiple people, you know, and they're back out on the streets. And it's really a shame, and the city is crying, you know, and on the south and west sides, there's just, it's hurting. And a lot of people say, well, you know what, if these people want to shoot at each other, just let them shoot at each other. But the fact of the matter is, these are people's sons. These are people's daughters. Obviously, we've had a lot of innocent bystanders get caught in the fire as well. Dwayne Wade's cousin, you know, the grandson of Danny Davis. I mean, these stories, they just never end. And on Christmas weekend, another 60 people shot. We've had over 4,000 people shot in this city so far this year. And that, to me, is the biggest story. And I hope it's one that gets addressed in 2017.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Well, there's certainly no shortage of things locally. In your mind, what is kind of the top, what is the top national story, the one that really just will stick with you for years for 2016? Is it the election or was it something else?
Absolutely, the election. I mean, it was unpredictable, unprecedented. It was, I mean, decisive. It was, I think that all of us, you know, everyone says, well, you know, the media was shocked. The media thought it was going to go one way. And all of the, you know, indicators were that, you know, this was going to be something that Hillary Clinton would win. I mean, that's what all the numbers said. But I want to point this out. There was, during this election, a piece of the population that has just not been covered. And this is what happens every election. You know, there are people who go out and vote who were never thought of before, who never heard from before. And there is a part of this population in rural segments of this country, typically white, typically high school educated, who said, you know what, I'm going to come out and vote because over the last 8 years, you know, my wages haven't gone up. Mm-hmm. We've seen factories shut down, and it may extend beyond 8 years. But all I see on the news is things about, you know, certain groups getting benefits, maybe LGBT community, maybe 15, March for 15, Fight for 15. Well, wait a minute. Where am I at in this? Where, you know, I'm not seeing any result of this. Instead, the factories are shutting down. I'm not seeing a business. I'm going to go out and vote. And, you know, for all of the things that Donald Trump said that got a lot of people up in arms, the one thing that he kept pounding is, I'm going to fight for your jobs. I'm going to bring jobs back. And that spoke to a good chunk, enough that he needed to win states like Michigan, to win states like Wisconsin, to win states like Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And I think that the message that Hillary Clinton was giving when she was going to these states was, look, we're looking beyond this. We're looking at clean burning energy. We're looking at, you know, better technology and better manufacturing jobs. And a lot of these people said, well, wait a minute. What does that mean for me? Are you just going to hire a bunch of people from U of I to take my jobs? And I think that we learned a lot about the population that, you know, the media in urban markets tends to focus on urban markets. And we didn't realize how much of a struggle it's been in these rural areas.
Yeah.
And it showed in the election, and the people came out and voted, and they showed exactly, you know, where their heart's at.
Right, right. And then, of course, there were so many sub-stories. When you say election, there's 50 stories beyond that with email and hacking and, you know, all this stuff. There was just so much. Well,
I think that the hacking stuff is going to be a big 2017 story.
Agreed.
I'll run through a couple quick ones. Flint water was a big one. I'll put that at 5. Terrorism, obviously. Nice, Berlin, OSU, all very similar. Number three, Orlando shooting. That Definitely. Was just obviously devastating. And number two, the Black Lives Matter versus Blue Lives Matter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the discussion throughout the summer, right?
Yeah.
Cops versus you know, particularly the African-American community. But that was, you know, one of the big stories.
Yeah, well, this time next year, let's see how things have changed. Hopefully, in some ways, change for the better, right? I hope lots of changes have come about in the ways that we need them to. But either way, I think no matter where people fall politically, I think we can all agree that there's work to be done and healing that we need to do and conversations to come together and have, for sure.
And I think we need to celebrate. We're about 20,000 at the Dow's up, so that's
yeah.
great. The jobs seem to be moving along pretty well, and the Cubs won the World Series, everyone.
Right?
It was all right from those perspectives
that's right.
in 2016.
That's right. We had some wins in 2016, indeed. Well, Ryan Burrow, thank you so much for being with us tonight. Go celebrate. Happy New Year to you.
All right. Take care.
Take care. All right. We're going to take a little break and we come back. We're going to check in with our friend David Miranda, WGN Zone, and we're going to talk about Chi-Town Rising because that's happening just behind us across the river. Lots of people outside feeling very celebratory, looking very festive. So we're going to check in and get a little preview of what's happening across the river here in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night New Year's Eve special. We're hanging out. Our good friend Dr. John Duffy is here with us, and WGN's own David Miranda is here. You were just across the river. Now you're back, and you're going back over there in a minute.
Yes.
You have so much going on. You're co-hosting Chi-Town Rising tonight, which is very exciting.
Yes, I am. I'm going to lose 10 pounds by today, not only because of the cold, but because it's all the running around. We just finished sure. the rehearsals. Sir the Baptist was just doing his sound check as well. I had never seen him perform. Wow.
Yeah.
He has a big choir with him. It's going to look good on TV. I can tell you that much.
Cool. Nice. So are people just packed over there? I can't totally see across
no,
all the stuff.
No, people are not going to be let in until 8 o'clock.
Okay.
So we're like minutes away.
Okay.
So that's why there's a big crowd over here because nobody can get in yet.
I see.
And there's going to be a silent disco right over here as well. It's going to be a disco where you only wear headphones. So people are going to be jamming and dancing and moving, but you won't be able to know what they're listening to.
That's so fun. I love that. I saw a video of one that happened in Berlin and it was ridiculous and so fun and people were just holding on their headphones and rocking out but it was dead silent. You could hear a little bit of traffic around them, but it was early in the morning. It was so funny.
Yeah, so great. I'm glad Chicago stepped up their game to have a party like this. I never knew. I learned why it's a star. I'm like, but why a star, not a ball like in New York, you know? And this
right.
one rises. In New York, the ball comes down. It represents the Chicago flag, the second star, which represents the Chicago Fire mm-hmm. of 1871. So I'm like, oh, I feel intelligent today.
No kidding.
We're a very, I said this earlier on Crosstalk with the sports guys on before me, that this city is like, we're the Phoenix that rises. It was like rising from the ashes, right? We literally rebuilt the city. And so I love the idea that the star goes up to rebuild, to, you know, reclaim the year. I love that.
Aspire something, yeah. So you're going to be able to see it nationwide on the 0.2 channel of NBC or Telemundo. You know how WGN TV has LCL TV,
yeah.
So on their point nationwide. If not here, join the party on Telemundo or NBC5.
Oh my gosh, that's so exciting.
Yeah, I'm very excited. The party, the music that was happening over there. If the practice were, the sound check was good with the artist, I can only imagine their show.
Yeah, it's going to be really fun. And you're going to be great. I'm so excited for you. That's so cool.
Yeah,
that you
right
get to,
there on
to host
Telemundo.
That.
I'll be speaking Spanish. Hopefully, I'll be able to roll my R's very well.
I've been working. My goal for 2017, I have a few of them, but one of them is to be bilingual by this time next year, English, Spanish. So I don't know. I'll watch and maybe I can hear it like every fourth word. I'll catch you.
I told you yesterday, you teach me English, I'll teach you Spanish.
But you have
right?
a definite
Fair
advantage
enough.
Over me, for sure. Well, we won't keep you. I know you got to go do the things, go be a big star and host all of Chicago and all everybody, the
I'll
world,
keep you
the
posted.
Nation. What?
I'll keep you posted.
Please
if anything
do.
Happens.
We'll keep checking in with you. So holler at us as things unfold and good luck to you tonight. And it'll be very fun. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too.
All right. We're going to, Rach, are we taking a break? Or are we going right to news? We're going to take a little break. Nope. Nope. She's giving me like referee signs. We're going to go right to news. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Our good friend, Dr. John Duffy, is hanging out with us tonight, regular contributor to this program. We are talking all about 2016 as we are lovingly sending it off into the sunset and looking ahead to 2017. The star is right over my shoulder, and there's a big countdown clock on it. So we're about,
it's clock just under 4 hours.
It's 4 hours away. We are going to be bidding adieu to 2016. And so we've been reflecting on it this show. We're looking back at the headlines that really, really took up a lot of brain space, that drove us crazy or that made us very excited. All those things, the stories that kept us on the edge of our seats in 2016. And we have now with us our good friend, WGN's own Sam Panionovich is here with us. Hello, Sam. How are you?
Happy New Year. Can I say that? Is it cordial to say that now, or do I have to wait and call back at midnight?
You should do both of those things.
Okay. How are you, Amy?
Good. I have no idea who will be on at midnight, but you should definitely call and wish that person a Happy New Year for sure. So you do all the things sports here at WGN, and we love that you do, and we always appreciate the things that you tell us and all the news that you bring us in the sports world. And so as we're reflecting on 2016, what are the big sports stories that stick out to you, aside from, I think, obviously, the Cubs win is a big, big one. But there's a lot, really. Once we start digging, there's a ton of them. What are the ones in your mind?
Well, I actually made a list for you. And obviously, number one is the Cubs snapping that 100-year title drought in baseball and kicking the billy goat right in the teeth. That has to be number one here in Chicago. But if you look, honestly, throughout the landscape, I mean, there were so many big stories. In basketball, the Cavaliers rallied from down 3-1 in the finals and broke a 52-year title drought in the city of Cleveland. Yeah. The 2016 Rio Games, the Americans won 46 gold medals, and it was the end of the Olympic career for Michael Phelps. The Broncos won the Super Bowl and sent Peyton Manning out on top in his final game. The NCAA title game, Villanova won on a three-point shot at the buzzer. The national championship in college football saw 40 points in the fourth quarter. Alabama beat Clemson. We saw the retirement of Kobe Bryant, and he scored 60 points in his final game. And then, of course, with every good comes some bad, and we lost some great legends. We lost Muhammad Ali, and we lost Gordie Howe. So you can make a case that in the last 25 years, just the storylines in 2016 alone make it one of the greatest years ever for sports.
Yeah. You know, also Jose Fernandez, who was killed in that boat crash.
Right. Yeah, that too. I mean, it's been a whirlwind of a year. And not to mention, I didn't even mention that Patrick Kane became the first American-born player to win the National League MVP or the National Hockey League MVP.
Yeah.
I somehow left that off. So there's been plenty to talk about.
For sure. And then we can't really get too far into sports without, of course, considering that Colin Kaepernick really started a nationwide conversation with a very simple gesture that is still very polarizing to people.
Right, kneeling during the national anthem. And it was extremely polarizing, and it's an issue that you either love it or you hate it. Many pundits were against it. But if you actually pay attention to what's going on inside that locker room, his teammates just loved it to death. And he just won an award for, like, Sportsman of the Year in the NFL. So colleagues and friends and peers in the NFL appreciate what he did. And, of course, that was a movement that spread not only throughout San Francisco, but it spread throughout the NFL and it spread throughout sports. I mean, there are guys that don't even stand during the anthem in basketball and baseball. So it was certainly a political statement and one that made a lot of people unhappy. But it was a good cause on his end, and he's not going to fight. He's not going to let people tell him what to do. He's going to, you know, stand by what he believes in.
Yeah, definitely. And I think even just in the last few weeks, I feel like I saw a cheerleader doing that. Like, she took a knee during a national anthem. So it's all over the place.
And children, kids and kids sports are doing it as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is really interesting to see. That really did, for better or worse, right? Like, cause as you said, Sam, it's very polarizing and people have really strong opinions about it. But nonetheless, it got us talking about something, which I think has been a theme of this year. It got us talking about difficult things. Well, so certainly no shortage of headlines in the sports world. What are your, if you had to look into your sports crystal ball, what do you think is ahead for us in 2017?
I do think the Chicago Blackhawks bring Lord Stanley back to the Windy City. I think they're going to win the Stanley Cup this year because when they got bounced in the first round against St. Louis, nobody needed rest more than the Blackhawks. I mean, since 2010, they made deep runs in the postseason pretty much every year. Their veterans were tired. Their younger players weren't ready. But I think this year they're going to catch lightning in a bottle. I think they're going to be decent. I think they're going to be probably a one or two seed in the West. And I think they're going to win the Cup. I think the Bulls might blow the whole thing up. That could be interesting. Maybe the Bears win 5 games in 2017.
Maybe.
The White Sox could lose 100 games. That would be interesting because they just traded Chris Sale and traded Adam Eaton and could trade more players as they try and bottom out and retool. And, of course, on the north side of town, guess who the World Series favorites are again in baseball? The Chicago Cubs. So it could be a good year for some. It will be a poor year for others. And with the White Sox and the Bears, it just you don't know. You don't know. It could be so bad that we don't even want to pay attention to them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I haven't told you this yet, Sam, but I would like you to know that I won my fantasy football league for the second year in a row. Just FYI, because I'm.
And you beat that guy you really needed to beat.
I did. Yeah, there's a guy that was on my fantasy football team. That was a little bit of a smack talker. And I needed to beat him, and I did. So
you get a trophy for that, or is there like a
yes.
plaque or a medal?
There are a lot of those things. There's a very large, ridiculous trophy. It's like 3.5 feet tall. It has been behind my bedroom door all year because it's huge. I don't know where to put a trophy that big. And I get to keep it. So whoever you pass the trophy around in this league, and then you get to keep the medal. So I have a medal and a trophy, but I'm like, I'm going to keep the trophy for another year at least, and then get another medal. So I
that's the way to do it. That's the way to do it. By the way, I forgot a different headline. The Bulls traded Derrick Rose to New York.
Derrick Rose
era ended in Chicago, and I'll tell you one thing. I'm the same age as Derrick. I played against him growing up. I was always in his corner. I'm still in his corner right now. The way that the city of Chicago turned on a guy who had two knee surgeries and just the mental capacity, he was so scared to get back on the court. And Adidas pushed him out. They labeled that big shoe release with the return, and it never happened. And you know, Chicago really turned on the kid from Englewood, from the South Side, who won 2 state titles in high school, national runners-up in college, youngest MVP in the history of the league, and unfortunately, injuries derailed the career. Now, some people are going to be upset because he left a lot of money in his pockets and he wasn't playing, but that was another story this year. We lost Derrick Rose in New York.
Yeah, that's a good one to remember for sure. And it's interesting to me the role that that social media plays in being a sports fan. It's interesting. It's like a dual experience. You're watching a game, but you're also looking at Twitter or something and looking at all the conversation around it, which is so interesting because it's at its best, it's kind of jovial and fun smack talk that's polite. But at its worst, sometimes, I mean, it can get really bad.
Yeah. In fact, you know full well what it's like to deal with the gutters of social media. But a perfect example of that is when Muhammad Ali passed away, Hank Aaron, who was the longtime Major League Baseball home run king before Barry Bonds surpassed him. Hank Aaron tweeted when Muhammad Ali passed away, and he said, we lost the greatest to ever live and the greatest to ever do it and the greatest showman. And if you would click on that tweet from Hank Aaron, the first response is from some egg account, and it says, you're next.
Oh,
so, wow.
Yeah. That's just the way it goes. You have the best of the internet and the worst of the internet, literally in two lines.
Right. Right. 140 characters at a time. The best and the worst right there all together. Oh, my gosh. Well, Sam, I'm sure you've got lots to do and lots of celebrating to do ahead tonight. So I will let you run. But thanks for stopping by and talking with us about some of the highlights and lowlights in 2016 sports. Thanks very much.
Anytime. You got it.
All right, we are going to take a little break, and when we come back, we will continue this conversation about all the things that happened in 2016, the highlights, the lowlights, all those things, and we're going to start looking ahead to 2017 and make a couple predictions about what we think will be happening in the year ahead. Back in just a bit on 720. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday night New Year's Eve special. We're hanging out. We're looking at lots of festive people heading to the big star across the river right there for Chi-Town Rising. Lots of people out being very, very festive. I hope whatever you're doing, you have a plan for safe travels tonight. Remember, the CTA is free and there's Lyft and Uber and friends and taxis. And there's also the option of just parking wherever you land and not doing that. But what I want you to not do is get behind the wheel of a car. I need everybody to get home safely and make a plan and be responsible. I don't ask much of you, but I'm asking you that for sure. My friends, we are talking all about 2016 this evening as we are seeing it off. We are watching it go and we are welcoming 2017 with open arms. Fresh start for all things. And we're looking at some of the big headlines of the year. We talked a little bit ago with Ryan Burrow, who's from WGN here, who does news for us. And he's so, so on top of all the things. And he was talking about some of the local and national news stories that stuck out for him. And of course, we talked with Sam Panionovic in sports about some of the big sports moments for 2016 for him. And we now have with us Griffin Filipich, who is my producer during the Wintrust business lunch on Saturdays. And he also has this unbelievably encyclopedic knowledge of movies and always has wonderful and thoughtful perspective on all of them. Welcome to the show, Griffin. Nice to have you with us
tonight.
Thank
you. So, thank you for saying that you don't have to. I was going to try to provide more of like the regular Joe's take on the movies, but if you want to cast me as a sort of expert, I'll take it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
I'm handing you that expertise. That's my New Year's Eve gift to you, is your expertise in movies shall be acknowledged. So as you are looking back at 2016, what are the films that really stick out for you?
I put together like a real impromptu top 10, but because when this time every year, when these year end lists come out, I go to see a lot of movies, or I try to. It's one of my favorite things to do. But you look at them like, I didn't get to see any of these. They're like, at best, you've seen like 4 out of the 10 or sometimes less. And it can be really frustrating. And that's definitely been the case for me this year again. But so I don't claim to have seen everything, but I put together a top 10 if you want to hear it.
I do.
I don't know if that's the best way to go through this, but
I started to make a top 10 because I thought we could compare notes, but then I couldn't get to 10. There were some.
You don't think you've seen 10 movies this year?
I don't think I've seen 10 movies this year. But I also would say the last 2 or 3 years, I didn't feel strongly about seeing very many movies. And then this year, there were many that I was like, ooh, I got to see that. I got to see that. I got to see that. So I think that's
been a real strong surge here at the end. I feel like there's been a lot.
For sure.
It was the summer was a real downer, and I think if you look at the top box office earners of this year, it can feel kind of drab. But then in the past few months, it has felt like, oh, gosh, there's so much I need to see and not enough time. So it's been pretty uneven, but it's been exciting these past couple months.
Indeed. Okay, so what's on your top 10 list?
I put at number 10 this movie called Queen of Katwe. It's a Disney live-action movie adapted from an ESPN magazine article about Fiona Mutesi, a girl from Uganda who became a chess master. It came out just a couple months ago. It was such a great time at the movies when I needed it. I think it made me feel really good, but it also wasn't just like candy. It was filled with life and love and energy. It also stars David Oyelowo and Lupita Nyong'o, two of the best actors, paired with like amateur first-time actors, and watching them shepherd kids through scenes that, you know, in situations they haven't been in before, there's a lot of energy in watching something like that. It was really fun. I don't know how many people ended up seeing it, even though it was a Disney movie. But I really recommend that people check that out. It's super sweet. I loved it.
I feel like Lupita Nyong'o could tell me to jump off a bridge and I would do it. I think she is so...
I know.
Delightful and just has this wonderful, cheerful, joyful vibe to her that I would be like, sure, I'll jump off that bridge. Whatever you need, madam, I'll do it. I think she's so lovely.
She never does.
But luckily, she's so cheerful and joyful, she would not tell me to jump off a bridge. Okay, so what's next on your list?
Number 9, there's this movie called Love and Friendship. It was based on a Jane Austen novella named Lady Susan, and Kate Beckinsale plays that character, and she's like a conniving, hilariously detached widow who's looking to find a new husband for her daughter and herself. And I've never laughed so much at a Jane Austen adaptation, although there's plenty that are really funny, but it's really funny and stylish. And I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did. So there it is.
Okay. All right. What about number 8?
There's a movie called The Fitz from a first time director named Anna Rose Homer. It's about a girl named Tony who goes, from training with her brother at a boxing gym to joining a girls' dance team. And after she joins the dance team, she's the older girls on the team are starting to experience seizure-like episodes that they take to calling the fits. That's where the title of the movie comes from. And she's dreading that experience because it seems to be happening to all of her peers. It's about, like, impending adolescence, and there's sort of a creepy vibe to it as well. It's hard to pin down. It's really good.
Excellent.
It had two or three like dance sequences that were some of the best things I saw in movies this year. I really loved it.
Which is interesting because I feel like we have not seen or heard anything about the musical, like that Hollywood musical. And then suddenly there it was this year with that one and with La La Land.
Oh, yeah. Well, La La Land. I did want to put it on my top 10. It just got kicked out at the last moment because I don't know why exactly, but I did
I didn't have much more fun than watching that movie. Yeah, I think there were a lot of really good music movies. There was one earlier in the year called Sing Street also that mm-hmm. was super fun. And Pop Star with Andy Samberg, I feel like, was a huge box office bomb. But I think it'll live on once people start to find it and see how funny it is. It's very funny.
Right, right.
Definitely worth watching. And I, also on my list, Manchester by the Sea, I put it number 7. I had to find a place for it somewhere. It's very sad, but it's very good. I think everybody's heard that story over and over. So I won't tell anybody else to go see it, but it is really good.
And do you think that it is worthy of the Oscar buzz that's running around about it?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, some revelations about Casey Affleck's personal life with sexual harassment cases that came against him like 6 years ago. Those have been troubling, and I don't really know how to separate that from the movie. So I don't know if I'll be rooting him on at the Oscars, although I think he's got a good chance at winning. That's made everything about it feel a little icky, but the truth is that I don't know. I don't like to be the guy making this case, but it is a great movie. Kenneth Lonergan is a master at like capturing everyday rhythms of life in film, and then also taking on huge themes like regret and shame, but doing it in a way that is not, you know, over dramatic or anything like that. So
sure,
it's a great movie. I do understand if people are put off by that off screen stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to separate that kind of thing, right? That, I mean, that's a thing that's plagued many celebrities when they do something, you know, or
and
when
once you pick one person, once you pick one person, it's like, oh god, there's so much that I can't watch now because everybody's terrible. that is how it starts to feel sometimes. There's a movie called Krisha that I put at number 6. It's a very simple story of a very, very bad Thanksgiving. It was another really small movie filmed for like under $100,000 in first-time director Trey Edward Schultz's house, his family home, and he cast his family in all the supporting roles and used his aunt as the title character Krisha, and her real name is Krisha.
That's admirable.
Very personal.
That's very admirable. As
I don't know how you could do it. I don't think I could work with my whole family like that.
I can barely sit through dinner with my whole family, much less film them. Wow.
Film them, and it's a very it plays like a horror movie. You get the feeling that nothing's going to go right, and it really doesn't. It's a very bad Thanksgiving. Maybe watch it to appreciate your own family a little
bit
more.
Those are some of the best sometimes. Okay, what's next on the list?
Number 5, there's a movie called The Handmaiden. It's in Japanese occupied Korea. A con man hires a pickpocket to become the maid to a mysterious Japanese heiress who he plans to marry and commit to an asylum in order to steal her inheritance. So it's already like the plot is like, what? And the director is a guy named Park Chan-wook, and he's a master of audience manipulation. He like double crosses you so many times in this movie. You start to wonder what is actually happening, and it'll leave you a little bit exasperated, but it's visually stunning. Maybe the best looking movie of the year, with the exception of my number 1, which we'll get to soon.
All right.
But it's laugh out loud funny. And I don't know. It's like every single movie is somewhere in this one. So it's just a blast to watch.
Interesting.
And then, yeah, I loved it. I loved it. At number 4, I put this movie called The Edge of 17. It just came out about a month ago. It's a teen movie starring Hailee Steinfeld. She was in True Grit as a little girl, but now she's like a pop star and a really good actress. And she plays a girl in high school. Her best friend starts dating her brother, and she's pissed off about that.
Sure, that'll make it weird anytime. all right.
I don't know how this got so high up on my list, but it's just like the best teen movie, and I love teen movies. And it's the best one I've seen in so long, maybe since Juno.
Wow,
or like that.
That's high praise. Juno was a good one. All right.
Yeah, really good. Number 3, I put The Witch. This was a horror movie from earlier in the year. But it's not like many horror movies I've ever seen. It's like really mesmerizing and terrifying.
I've heard a lot of people mention that one. I haven't seen that one in particular, but a lot of people have mentioned that as just being creepy in a new way and scary in a new and different way.
It was advertised like a standard horror movie, but it's really not. It's a lot slower than that. I think it put a lot of audiences off. In its initial run, they didn't like it. But if you are willing to take it as it comes, it's so scary to me. And it has the single best line of the year, I think. And I think you'll know it when you hear it. It's very weird and very scary. But,
okay, good. All right, good.
So my top two, and these are almost interchangeable. I love them both almost equally. But I put at number two a movie called Certain Women. It's directed by Kelly Reichardt, who's one of my favorite directors. And I think this might be her best movie. It's divided in three parts. It tells the stories of three or four different women who whose lives sort of crisscross, but not that much. And it's just chronicles like frustrating encounters between determined women and deeply pathetic men, and at least in the first two. The third one, and the best part.
I love that.
It's just true. That's what it is. That sounds good. The third one is more of a love story, and that's the best part. It breaks from the first two stories, but it's Laura Dern, Michelle Williams, and Kristen Stewart, and Lily Gladstone, a newcomer, but they all give amazing performances. I loved it. It could have just easily been my number one, but like most people, I put Moonlight as my number one.
I knew that's what you're going to pick. I knew it. Yep.
Yeah. It just seems like the right answer, and I mean, go forth and believe whatever you want. There's no right answers here, but this is the movie of the year, and it's the most visually beautiful. I said The Handmaiden might be, but this is the winner. And it's got four or five performances that should be nominated for Oscars. I don't think they will. It's hard to tell, but Mahershala Ali, Andre Holland, and Trevante Rhodes especially are hugely, like, it's just one of those movies that I haven't stopped thinking about since I saw it.
That's always the mark of it.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's how you know.
Yep, that's how you know. Awesome. Well, this is a good list. There's a couple I need I need to rethink mine, maybe. All right.
Yeah, no, I want to hear yours. Maybe I'll mention it in the next segment or something. I got to keep listening.
Yeah, maybe. You should just keep
listening. I'm watching the clock. I'm sorry about that.
It's all good.
Yep. Producer brain.
I know. Producer brain says we got to go to news now. But thank you so much for calling in and for sharing this list of movies
and
your encyclopedic knowledge and all of that good stuff. And Rachel's making a face at me. What's wrong? What's wrong? She's making a face like I just did something awful.
No, there was like a really weird face on that big star right behind you.
Oh, you scared me to death. I thought like I had done something. Oh, my gosh.
I was scared because there was a giant face like a few stories high behind you.
It's David Miranda. That's what's happening. All right.
And speaking of passing celebrities.
Oh, no.
Father Mulcahy from MASH.
Oh.
William Christopher.
Just wow. Now.
He was 84.
Oh, look at that. Man. All right. All right.
Right under the line.
We're going to turn things over to you here in a second. Griffin Filipich, thanks so much for being with us. Tonight, we are talking all about rock shows.
When you see a festival, you want to be part of something. You want to feel a sense of identity. You want to be with the crowd. That's not me. I just want to be up close. I want to feel the sweat, the kinetic energy. I want to feel the danger of rock and roll.
Filmmakers that would go to LA, and I really feel like that's happening less and less now. People are really starting to stick around, and in fact, I think people are starting to help give those artists reason to stick around.
So characters who might be minorities, you know, someone who is South Asian or a lesbian or Muslim or brown-skinned or any combination of any all of those identities can be as weird and flawed and confused as anybody else. They don't have to, be an ideal human.
But for a night all about female filmmakers, we didn't talk about that very much.
And I think that's important because, if it went that way, it went that way. Do you
know
what I mean?
Sure.
It was more about, let's just celebrate these great filmmakers that we have in Chicago.
Yeah.
And tonight we just happen to be celebrating great filmmakers that are women.
720 WGN. It's Amy Guth, and tonight is the Saturday Night New Year's Eve special. And we were just pulling a couple clips there from shows from the past year. We were just talking with WGN producer Griffin Filipich about movies that we must all go see. He is so good at finding the unexpected films, right? And so we're hanging out. Our good friend Dr. John Duffy's in studio with us tonight to help us ring in the new year. And we've been looking at old shows and past shows and talking about news headlines and sports headlines and all of those things. And I think that I just have this feeling because I keep looking at social media and people are like, oh, I'm just ready to be, I'm ready for it to be midnight. I'm just ready. I feel like people are very, very ready for this new year to happen.
They're done with 2016.
They're done. Yeah. They're done. And as you pointed out, like we've kind of talked ourselves into how bad it's been.
Right.
A lot of stuff has happened, but nonetheless, we've talked ourselves into some stuff too. But we have with us now our good friend Rex Hupke, who is the other half of Guth and Hupke on Politics. And you have a piece, Rex, that is so funny that is at ChicagoTribune.com, and everybody should go find it, about your predictions for what you think is going to happen in the new year. I mean,
guaranteed.
Oh, there you are. Sorry.
Sorry. No, I'm here.
You're here. I just heard you say guaranteed. Try that again.
Yeah. Sorry. Surefire, 100% guaranteed prediction.
Yeah. All the things. I want to start with the one guaranteed, where you said something about getting, let's see, you put your own calves in this list. So we're, yeah, that's a thing. Okay.
Finally, time to appreciate them, I think.
You're ridiculous, Rex Hupke. You're ridiculous.
America.
So how are you feeling on, as we have hours left of this last day of 2016? You and I have talked a lot about the political headlines of this year, Rex, sometimes to our exasperation. I was going to say sometimes to our delight, but no, not really. Mostly to our exasperation.
Pretty much just exasperation, I'd say. Yeah, definitely.
And the thing, Dr. Duffy, the thing that keeps coming up on the podcast that we keep saying is pretty much we've been wrong about everything.
You know, I think we've all been wrong about everything. We can't isolate you two.
You hear that?
A
professional has just cleared us, Rex.
Nice.
Nice.
We are nothing if not consistently incorrect.
That's true. I mean, everything, we're like, this is what's probably going to go down, and then this, nope, 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 nope. Actually, the only thing we were right about is absolutely nothing will change when the Electoral College convenes on December the 19th. That's all we were right about.
One. You got
that's
that
it.
One right. Yeah. Yeah.
What a dubious honor.
Yeah, that's like a stopped clock being right twice a day.
It's like that, right? Okay, so let us look forward to predictions for the new year. What is your top prediction of 2017, Rex?
Well, given that we've prefaced this with me being completely wrong about everything, I may as well just go full blast. But my prediction is that by the end of 2017, we will have President Mike Pence.
Oh.
How do you like that one? Yes, that is my prediction. Yes, and I'm not saying that that's necessarily gives me lots of good feelings, but it does make me probably sleep a little bit easier at night. So that is, I think that's a definite possibility. By the end of 2017, let's get, you know, these things take time. But...
So you're not going to even give it to midterms. You're saying like straight up this year.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
But, you know, hey, look, when you're wrong this much, you just let it all hang out. You know,
Rex, I got a question for you. Is it going to be a problem with policy decisions, or is it going to be over and separating permanently, at least for the 4 years he's in office, himself from his businesses?
Well, Dave, I don't know if the man's got tarot cards out with political figures on them, but yeah, I'm curious. What do you say, Rex?
I think it's either business related ties, or what I actually think is the most likely is, I think this Russian, these Russian connections, I think if they find evidence of any kind of collusion with the Russians during the campaign, that would give the Republicans, who don't actually like him, cause to try to get him out of there and get Pence, who they probably would like in there, in. So I honestly think that there are a lot of establishment Republicans who have just been along for the ride, and now that they've won, once they get him in office, they would be very happy to get him out as quickly as possible and put Pence in, because he's more their speed anyway. That obviously is a lot of conspiratorial blah blah on my part, I realize, but you know, that's my so I think either the business or possibly some form of communication between, or coordination between, his campaign and the hackers, the Russian hackers. But who knows? Again, I mean, I also think I'll have a jetpack by February, so who knows?
Right.
I'm just letting it all hang out tonight. Right.
You got to be right on one of these things, man.
Right. Just keep throwing things out. Eventually something's going to stick, for sure. Well, I think it's going to be, my prediction is, I think it's going to be a really interesting year for technology. You know, I kind of scoffed when I heard about these Snapchat glasses because I was like, did we learn nothing from Google glasses? But they're a little bit different. And I think that you would use them in a different way. And these little kiosks are kind of cool. And I mean, I haven't interacted with one, but I think it's going to be an interesting time. I feel like social media is kind of set quietly for a little bit and been doing the same thing. So I think we're going to have some rapid changes in social media. I hope that is in the culture of social media, that we're a little bit nicer to each other on social media. I realize I too could be extremely wrong about that because it might get much worse before it gets better. But that's my hope. But I think too, we're seeing tech giants kind of take some interesting, I don't want to say like a moonshot necessarily, although some of them are doing that, but they're like making forays into directions where they're kind of conveying what they're looking to do. Like Amazon is kind of playing with drones and things mm-hmm. like that. I think that'll be really interesting of tech stuff that we'll see in the year ahead.
I agree. I think that there's a very good chance that there is a swing towards civility, because I think if we're not at the bottom, we're damn close. I mean, right. we don't have a lot further to go. So,
don't say that, Rex. Every time we say, like, did you learn nothing from watching Coyote and Roadrunner? If you say that, an anvil falls out of the sky, and then there's like a stick of dynamite.
As I said, that 3,000 trolls on Twitter just called me a.
I know. I was going to say you just got called
literal
all
the loser, dorkwad, right. or something like that.
Right. A whole army of trolls just whooped up on you the second you said that. Dr. Duffy, what's your prediction for the year? What do you think?
I like the idea, and I suspect it's true that we're going to lean towards civility. What I would add to that is I think some of that movement is going to be led by millennials who have been disparaged, especially in the last couple of days, by a few videos that have gone really, really mm-hmm. viral, suggesting that this is a very kind of entitled, egocentric generation. And my experience with them, just clinically and otherwise, is that that's actually really way off the mark. And they're actually mm-hmm. more thoughtful in a lot of ways and considerate of one another than we are. And so my hope and my prediction would be that there's going to be a movement led by a younger group that brings some civility to the discourse.
Okay. Rex, what do you think about that?
I love that. And I think you're spot on personally, and putting on my workplace columnist hat, I've written several times about millennials, and I feel like they are being very unfairly maligned. And I think that at the end of the day, they are going to bring tremendous positive changes to the workplace because they have what a lot of people interpret as being entitlement, laziness, even, is just a different way of thinking about work. And I think it's something that frees things up a lot. And I think they do a lot of positive things. They want a goal in life. They want a purpose, and they want a reason that they're doing things. And they want that to be positive and good for the planet. And I agree. I think there's a lot of really, really tremendous qualities in the millennial generation that are getting overlooked by some of, I guess, their quirks, which frankly, every generation has quirks and weird stuff that they do or things that are perceived as negative. So yeah, I really agree with that. I think there's a lot of hope among the millennial generation, among my fellow millennials.
Get out of town, Rex Hupke.
I just hope they give me a jetpack. So there we go.
Also the jetpack. Well, I still say that is all well and good, and I agree with you. But I still say we, meaning the delightful Gen Xers that we are, I think we are not finished yet. I think we still have a little Gen X uprising in us. Give it time. We just need the right thing, and we need to feel really good about it, and we need to all feel like we're doing it independently because we're so introverted. We just all need to do our thing and have self-sufficiency while doing so. But, oh, no, Gen X is not done. We're not done. We've got stuff.
Well, and, you know, there could be kind of a link up there, too, I think. I mean, I think a lot of generations kind of look at the younger generation. They kind of look down their noses at the younger generation at first, but then they're sort of a coming together, and they sort of help pull them up a little bit too. So I think there are things that we as Gen Xers can do to, help millennials as they kind of continue to grow into, adult, broader adult life and all that kind of stuff. So, I like that idea though. I think that I do think there's hope. I mean, despite all of the negativity of this year, and all of the nastiness online and all that sort of stuff, I still believe that most people remain good people. And I think we'll find our way back to that.
I like it. I agree. Amen to that. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody, head to ChicagoTribune.com and read Rex Hupke's New Year's predictions, because let me read to you the full headline of this piece so you can find it. It is New Year's Predictions, Trump Impeached and Calves Appreciated. So go find that. Rex Hupke, you make me laugh so much, and it is a joy doing radio with you every time I get the opportunity.
Here. So, this has been a fun year. Yeah.
It has been a fun year, and I appreciate all the radio that we have done together. So,
me too, very much.
Include the live radio and the podcast one where we swear a lot.
Yes, that especially. We get real sailor-like.
Mostly me, but also a little bit you.
Yeah, I'm learning.
I'll teach you those F-bombs in no time, Rex. All right. Well, happy New Year to you, my friend. And
happy to you both. Yeah.
Happy New Year, Rex.
And wishing you a lovely 2017 with fewer trolls.
Indeed. All right. Thank you guys so much. Have a wonderful night.
All right. See you.
You too.
All right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back in just a bit on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It's Amy Guth wrapping up the Saturday night New Year's Eve special. We're going to turn things over to Dave Hoekstra here in a bit. And it looks like, you know what? I'm hearing lots of music and stuff happening in the green room. So I think he's got a band for you. So stick around for that. As usual, he often does. But Dr. John Duffy, it has been a joy to have you with us in studio tonight. And so as you're looking ahead to 2017, what do you most hope to see this time next year?
Yeah, you know, 2016, when I think back, has been so tumultuous and kind of emotionally divisive. So I'm hoping that 2017 repairs some of that, and we kind of broaden some of our definitions of family and friends and connection, and we communicate so much more clearly and openly with one another. And then I think good things can happen no matter who's sitting in the White House, who's in Congress, what's going on globally. I think solutions come better. And so, like you and Rex and I were just saying, I think there's potential for an intergenerational revolution here, to your point. And 2017 seems to be as good a year as any to get that started. And I'll take a Stanley Cup and a World Series win again.
Hey, sure.
That'd be great.
Yeah, whatever. That'd be fine. I'd take that, right? Indeed. Well, I feel like 2016 felt like a year of building. A lot of people were kind of building, making plans, doing stuff, and I think there was a lot of a little bit behind the scenes stuff for a lot of people. And so my hope is that 2017 is a year where we see people just doing the big things. Like the foundations have been laid, and now people are going to be like the quote unquote overnight success that took you 12 years to do or something. You know, I feel like we're going to see a lot of that in the year ahead.
I love that,
and that's going to be exciting because I don't begrudge that to people. I love it. I love when I see people doing well and thriving. Yeah. Unless they're jerks, then no. then no. But I think that's very cool, and I see a lot of, you know, and it's an exciting time in technology. As much as we talk about how that relates to the media world and how sometimes, particularly in print journalism, that kind of gets us a little sideways because the business model shifted. I've always said from the start, it's an exciting time to be in this field because it's like having a front row seat to history.
It's so fun to wonder what's next and how that's going to manifest and how much greater that's going to be, right?
Truly. So who knows this time next year, who knows what kind of things we'll be looking at or thinking about or what apps will be in our phone or, you know, all of those things.
Yeah.
I mean, if you just think back like 10 years ago, we couldn't have thought of Twitter.
No.
But yet, when I explained it to my grandfather, he was like, oh, it's like telegrams.
God love him.
You're like, well,
that's right.
You're right. It is telegram. Fair enough. Right. He's
just
like
a real fast telegram.
It's just a real fast telegram. But he right away was like, I see what that is. Okay, good.
Next. How great is that?
Right. And so it's interesting that sometimes it's the concept that stays the same and it's just the medium that changes.
Exactly.
So I think it's a year of exciting new things. But I also, as I said earlier in the show, I think it's also going to be a year where we have no choice but to have important and vulnerable conversations. I think, and I hope that vulnerability stops being a dirty word.
Oh, amen to that. Yeah. I mean, seriously, that because the more open and vulnerable we are with one another, the more we understand. And I think that's something I'll admit that I learned in 2016 is, oh, there's a lot I don't get. There's a lot I didn't listen to very well because I assumed I had some answers.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. I think What would you say? Is that your biggest lesson from 2016, or was there another?
No, that's the biggest one, for sure. I use the word available a lot, and I think oftentimes because of fear or judgment or ego, we're not so available as we could be to one another. And if we can put some of that to rest and recognize, okay, we are where we are, there's this division, and we can bridge that division if we're more open and available to anybody. I mean, maybe even more the people who have a differing point of view than the people who think alike, you know, just exactly like we do.
Because
think we have this confirmation bias we're always chasing. And instead of letting ourselves be challenged and really listening to somebody else's point of view.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
And I think, or I hope anyway, that in the year ahead, if not this one, next one, but soon, I hope it stops being cool to you know, somewhere we got in this place where it was like it wasn't cool to have any feelings,
right?
Or it wasn't cool to have feelings. So it's like the default setting is aloof.
Yes.
If you meet someone and they're cool and you want to be friends and hang out, like you're just be like, anyway, here's my card, bye. You know, and so nonchalant about things. And I hope we get to a place where we can just be authentic and be like, you're really cool. We should hang out. Great. You know?
I love that. I love the idea of a renaissance of emotional openness, you know.
I'm really, writing that
truly,
down.
You know, and I think probably your gender is more open to that than mine. But I think if we can meet somewhere in the middle, that can really happen. And I see it happening in little ways.
Yeah.
But I think this year it could happen in bigger ways.
And that would be cool.
Yeah.
And I think we need it, you know,
as
we talk about things that divide us, and we've suddenly all kind of, as the dust settles, we're looking up and we're like, wow, this conversation needs to go 10 miles before it can even meet in the middle.
Right.
I think we need to approach them vulnerably and approach with saying big truths that are sometimes hard and saying like, well, I don't know how to have this conversation, but I want to. I think even saying that can go very far.
The meta, right? That meta look inside, like, you know, this is going to be hard. We might have to inject a little humor here and there to make it work, but we're going to make it work, and we'll hang in with each other.
Yeah, we're going to have this conversation.
Yeah.
So that's my hope, and I hope that for all of us. But as I said at the top of the show, I hope that we all have a year of more of the things that we want in our lives, more love, more joy, more all the things we can give. We can give more generosity. We can give more smiles, more care, more compassion, all of those things. Let it be a year of more, and the more starts with us. So let it be that.